The baby making years are hard. I'm Dr. Sterling, and I'm here to help. Welcome to the Ask Dr. Sterling podcast.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or qualified health provider with any medical questions you may have. We are back with the Ask Dr. Sterling podcast, and we are joined by a special guest. Kimberly Quinlan is a licensed marriage and family therapist who got the degree in Los Angeles and then went on to Oxford to get a certificate in cognitive behavioral therapy. But why we are super excited to have her here today is the fact that she specializes in compassionate science-based treatments for OCD, anxiety, and OCD-related disorders, which is very common in postpartum, with an emphasis on mindfulness, which, Dr. Sterling, right up your alley. What more could we ask for in a therapist?
Exactly. Here? Perfect. Yeah. Thank you for being here.
So happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You have a focus on self-compassion, and we'd love to hear how that focus came about and your journey as a mom. Did that tailor why you were interested? What came first, motherhood or an interest in self-compassion?
No, self-compassion had to come first. So yes, I am an OCD and anxiety specialist. It's what I love to do. The story of this for me predates even that, in that I had a pretty severe eating disorder before I became a therapist and went to therapy. And a part of the treatment was to practice mindfulness and sort of maybe on skirt around the idea of self-compassion. And I was very against it to start with, like it was against the eating disorder rules to be kind to myself. But through a lot of learning and treatment, I really learned those practices and then of course went on to become a therapist because I wanted to help other people with that as well. But when I became a mom, it was like I was brand new, starting all over again. Like I had to practice it in this completely new arena that I didn't even know was going to be an issue. So it was sort of round two of this practice.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you can learn a lesson in one area of your life and the universe finds a way to bring it back and say, let's just get you an advanced degree now. Yeah. Let's really test how compassionate are you? Yeah. You know, there's so many experiences in motherhood that we have, we'll have this kind of normal reaction to a situation, say a crying baby, which is just objectively a very overwhelming experience, especially when you're a new mom with all the brain changes, feel that cry in your bones and you feel that sense of frustration, overwhelm, or feeling like you want to be away from your baby. And then the next thing that happens is the sense that there's something wrong with me, that I'm reacting to baby. I would love to hear your perspective on why self-compassion is so challenging when you become a mom, even more so than other areas of our life.
Well, the thing to remember here in general, not just for being a mom, but for being a human, is the practice of self-criticism and self-judgment actually has played a role in our evolution. So back in thousands of years ago, we were very tribal, right? And so often that would need to move from one location to another, the whole tribe, let's say. This is, I mean, it's going to be different for different areas of the world, but let's just use that as an example. So in order to do this migration, you had to keep up with the tribe. You had to keep up with the group, or you may or may not die. And so often this sort of self-talk that we have, we would engage in to stay with the group. Like, come on, you've got to get going. What's wrong with you? Like, keep up. Maybe you were even spoken to that way, so that as a way to keep you alive, maybe from the weather or from, you know, other stresses. So this, the behavior of guilt and shame and self-punishment and self-judgment, we have to understand has kept us alive back in the day. However, now we're not in that sort of threatening environment. We're not, there is some threatening parts of being a human being today, but that's not so much. But we have evolved in a way that we beat ourselves up just in case we fall behind. And so we're overusing a strategy that can be helpful in some dire, imminent stresses. We're overusing that in everyday life all day as a motivator to even sometimes achieve things that are higher than realistic expectations. So I always start with that because I think it's important that we're not punishing ourselves for how much we've punished ourselves. We're not criticizing ourselves for how much we've criticized ourselves. And so from there, we can see that we, if we have high expectations, which most moms do, we genuinely want to be great at this. The higher the expectation, often the higher the self-judgment and the self-criticism, because that's what we've learned to be the way in which we motivate ourselves to achieve those things.
That I think that really is going to hit home with a lot of our listeners, because they tend to find Dr. Sterling with that sentiment. One, they're high achievers because they want the education. And if you're a member of Sterling Parents, you want to be the best mom there is and you want to do all the things. But people often find the sentiment of it's okay to not be perfect. It's okay to not love every minute. And that compassion piece as well. So I think many of our listeners fall directly into this, the really high expectations, and tend to have, I guess, high criticism because of that.
Yeah. I think that we want to explore, and this is going really deep into it very early in the show, so I hope that's okay. But
absolutely,
we want to explore, why do you have to be extraordinary? Mm-hmm. So number one, our values to be a good mom is a great value. Like, I want to be the best mom too. But we have to explore why. Why have we got this goal to be extraordinary? Is it because it's genuinely our values, or is it because we're afraid of the feelings we might feel if we're not? Is it because of a belief we have about ourselves that we're not good enough if we're not, or that we're not worthy? Like, that can often explain to us first off, right off the cuff, if fear is running this show or if it's values.
It can be a mixed bag too, partially values and partially fear. I know that, you know, this is something that I have struggled with. I see it in my daughter. It's like, oh my goodness, you know, it's right, you know, it's in front of me now because I see it in my daughter. And it's something I really struggled with as a child and as going through all of the levels of school. And it wasn't until I was out of school and pregnant that I really was confronted by that. It's a big transition to move from being motivated by a fear of not having inherent worth and not being worthwhile to people around you unless you are exceptional, you know, unless you get the gold star and the 100% on the test, to aligning that with, you know, I still have ambition. I still really want to do big things. I want to do a good job. Navigating that line can be so challenging. And I think that's what people who struggle with this, oftentimes the fear is, well, if I let go, what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
What I will say is that letting go of the achievement being the thing that fills your cup and the positive words of affirmation of other people seeing that you are exceptional, letting go of that actually for me personally has been the thing that has really allowed me to blossom authentically into the big exceptional things, because I'm doing the big exceptional things that feel so good for my soul and my life and not what anybody else necessarily thinks I should be doing. I have people in my life who think that I should very much be doing something different than I am.
Yeah. And that goes back to that first question you asked me that I can go deeper into, which is we often believe, or we've been taught, that practicing kindness, practicing self-compassion will cause us to lose control, or that it's sort of a selfish act, that it's maybe some people might say narcissistic. Some people feel that it's a lazy act, right? There are a lot of myths that we bring with us about this practice that keep us locked into, if I'm not achieving, then I have no inherent worth, or if I'm not winning entirely something, you know, there's something wrong with me, or I'm a bad, quote unquote, bad mom. So those myths about these practices can give us a little peek into, what we believe about ourselves mostly.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think one of the and you tell me what you think. I think one of the powerful ways that you can see this in action is to try it in a situation where you're trying to do something difficult. Even, you know, it could be a situation with a kiddo, you know, having a meltdown, and try speaking to yourself in a really kind way. Or even something that if you're like trying to open a can of pickles, you know, or a jar of pickles, if you can speak to yourself in a really kind way and say, I can do this. It's okay if it takes time. That's how I, like, that was the first little inkling that kindness and being encouraging to myself was helpful, because I was doing procedures and I had the objective data that, oh, when I do this, the result is better.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was easier to kind of move into this kindness because I saw my performance was better. And so I think that sometimes we can say all, like, all along, kindness is good for you, blah, blah, blah. But y'all have to try it. You really have to try it. And I think that you'll see, you'll have the experience, this advice, it functions. It really does work.
For people who are really resistant to this work, we actually often just refer them to the data. There is a lot of scientific data that compares self-criticism with self-compassion. We know that people who tend to practice self-compassion are have an increased resilience. They tend to be more curious. They procrastinate less than those who use self-criticism, which I love that data.
So interesting.
Yeah, they actually procrastinate less. They're more likely to try new things and take risks, which then allows them to succeed more, try new things. Their overall wellness is significantly better. And so I often will use that as like a little bit of like a nudge to parents is the more you actually are nice to yourself, the more you get to be a present mom.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're going to do it, don't just do it for your kids. But there's some data to show that this is a beautiful practice that benefits everybody. And then plus you get to model it to them.
Yeah. Oh, I feel like, you know, I'm thinking of so many people in my life and myself at an earlier age. I don't know about you, Claire, but I'm just thinking about so many of us develop the self-criticism because that's really, that was how we were talked to as kids. And I had things that were said to me as a child too, that have stayed with me. I'm almost 40 and I'm unpacking. So what do you tell people who are like, that's, you know, that's our homeostasis. That's your like home base. Is this voice? And I can imagine it feels a little scary to leave that relationship with that voice. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
And before you give your thoughts, I want to add one more example that I think is going to resonate with a lot of people, especially moms in postpartum. For pregnancy, body changes and that voice that has been curated from generations of women having negative talk about their body. And now my personal voice is, I know I shouldn't be thinking about this. I can't believe I'm with my child thinking about how I don't like my body right now. So then my self-talk is, I'm mad that I'm even doing it because I know better.
Yeah.
Where do you start? Claire. Where do you start?
So good.
I think that's why I really started with this point is that our brains are wired to look for problems. That's the way our brains are wired. Our brains are genetically wired. The DNA is there to look for all the problems so that we can get ahead of the potential catastrophe. Yeah. So I think this is really important when it comes to anxiety management is, it's not that there's something wrong with your brain. That's its job. The part of the brain that sends out fear, its job is to zoom around and constantly be looking for every potential problem. So when your brain presents this to you, that your body's not right, or the dishes aren't done, or your house isn't clean enough, or your child's not respectful enough, or they didn't get the grades you wanted, or, you know, the millions of things that your brain presents that you're not doing, you didn't say that nice enough, or you didn't nurture them enough. That's your brain's job. It's doing a quick, I always sort of imagine like it's doing a quick scan of like, where could all the problems be just in case? So when it presents that to you, I would just say, thank you, brain, for being really effective. And we're going to actually you talked about the word curate. We're going to curate an attention point on how we're going to proceed.
Yeah.
We're going to make some very intentional decisions about which thought we give attention to and which ones we don't. And as Dr. Sterling was saying, then get to be very gentle in playing around. This is very baby steps with what would I like to hear? What would actually help me move in the direction that's helpful? Yeah. And an easy way to do this, because that might feel really yucky, because compassion is not, we always think of it as like unicorns and rainbows. It's not. Some people find it to be gross. They have this disgust reaction to it. So it's really simply saying, what would I say to a loved one if they were in this exact situation?
Yeah.
What would that be? Or another alternative would be, what would I love to hear?
Yeah.
In this experience.
I just had a thought and I'm curious your thoughts. So when you said that some people have a disgust reaction to compassion, I immediately thought, you know, when we're young, we really deeply desire that connection, that compassion from the people who take care of us.
Yeah.
We're in a very vulnerable place, right? Mm-hmm. That person is we are entirely dependent on them. And when you don't get that compassion, or you maybe get criticism or negativity back, when what you really want is validation and words of affirmation and all of that, I wonder if getting the compassion almost reminds us of that vulnerability, and we're just so just disgusted with that vulnerability because it's mm-hmm. such a tender place in us.
Yeah. For sure. It could be someone outside of us, a parent, a caretaker, could have been a teacher. It can also sometimes be just our brain, particularly if you have an anxiety disorder or a mood disorder. Your brain might even say you don't deserve that.
Yeah.
Or it's weak for wanting that. Or we're in too much danger to want that. So there could be many reasons why someone has that feeling of disgust. And again, often it is because of those learned beliefs about being self-compassionate, right? Yeah. That you're lazy, that you're weak, it's too vulnerable. People will hurt you if you're vulnerable. There's many reasons we have an immediate knee-jerk contraction to such an act.
Yeah. I will tell you, you feel when you first start doing it, I started doing it probably around 27. So it's been a little bit, God, it's been 12 years now. It feels super cheesy, but you know, man, when it works, it works. Claire, what are your thoughts?
So you have a self-compassion scale or quiz that you provide to really assess where you're at. And I think it's pretty evident. 27 years ago, Dr. Sterling might've been lower. Right now, you're probably killing it.
27 years ago?
Not when you were 27. I just aged you way too much.
I was like,
12 years.
Wait a second.
Ooh, take it back.
You're really drilling in that the 40th birthday is coming up, Claire.
My apologies. Now, I am very clearly low on the self-compassion scale. And we asked our broadcast channel on the Dr. Sterling OBGYN Instagram. And it is very clear that our audience tends to be on the lower scale as well. And I'll share some of those questions to give our listeners an idea of what that is. And then I have an important follow-up question here. So if you're listening, when you're going through a hard time, you give yourself the caring and tenderness that you deserve. And the scale that we were doing is always, sometimes, and never. The large majority said sometimes, the second highest was never. No one said that they always give themselves the caring and tenderness they deserve. Next question is, when you're feeling down, you tend to obsess and fixate on everything that is wrong. No one said never. Split halfway between always and sometimes. And lastly, when you feel inadequate in some way, you remind yourself that these feelings are felt by others. I think that's a huge one for early postpartum, or if you're miserable in pregnancy. And no surprise here, large majority said sometimes or never. Now, a lot of these questions make me think of mom guilt, which can start trying to conceive. That guilt. Is there like a direct correlation, you think, between lacking self-compassion and being consumed with mom guilt?
I would have to look at the research, but I would say from my experience, 1000%. Absolutely. Again, mom guilt. So for the sake of being thorough, guilt in and of itself is not a bad emotion. I don't want to vilify guilt. Guilt has a place in our world. It has a function. Yeah. Guilt is an emotion we feel when we haven't, like, let's say I snapped at my son. I would and should feel a some degree of guilt, which is really just a flag for me to say, how was that? Do you want to keep doing that? Is that in line with your values? You know, what was the impact of that? Just a quick, like, it shouldn't take more than a minute for me to do a check-in in response to that guilt.
Yeah.
Once we've noticed, like, no, that wasn't right. I don't want to do that. That wasn't cool. I was in a moment of reactivity. Maybe I was stressed. I would repair. I would do the thing to repair it and then move on with my day. So guilt is really just there to solve problems and move forward. Mom guilt, the way we understand mom guilt, is this ongoing rumination and punishment for the fact that you're a human being that's going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
So the guilt that you feel hasn't actually got a benefit. You've passed the place in which it was beneficial. Now you're going into a place where it's not beneficial. It's actually creating more consequences. So does that answer that part of the question?
Yeah.
So then what we can do is, when you talked about the relationship, is yes, people who have low self-compassion tend to stay in punishment, stay in criticism, stay in self-judgment, and it can become very just ruminative. There's no real solution. Yeah. There's no real outcome. It's just you're in the mud and you're just, I always just imagine, like, you're just stirring it like a pot of mud and goo with no real effective resolution. It's just you're there to punish.
Yeah. And it's draining. I mean, that's so draining. It's draining so much of your energy. And I think this really clarifies something for me, is that I have mom guilt. I just don't ruminate in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because of course I have those moments where I have a child that loves just, he's got my buttons on like a remote and he's like, he will look me in the eye and just press the button. So my gosh, I have moments all day where I'm like, remember, you want to be a kind and patient mother, Noah. You want to be a kind. I do say that to myself every day. That's part of my practice, is to have my values up front and center to say, I'm a kind and patient mother, because I'm not always a kind and patient mother. So I think that's a really great point. It's, I have those check-ins with myself all day long. I don't think about them after I've moved past them. Like, I'm not thinking about anything I did yesterday. There'll be plenty more later today, and there's plenty from this morning. There's never an end to it, you know?
Which is mind-blowing to me, because as someone with anxiety and OCD, limit does not exist for the amount that I can ruminate.
Yeah.
And to get unstuck with those thoughts, and it's mixed with me thinking I have to achieve, and my value system inappropriately being achievement-oriented. So there's so many things about, like, the expectations of moms today. My genetics mixed with not,
like,
having enough sleep
you,
to
Claire.
Do the work.
Where to start?
Where to start? Do you have any quick tips that you're working with a patient who is in it? How do you start?
I would say a couple of things. Okay, so when we start treatment with anybody, we use cognitive behavioral therapy. That's the science-based treatment modality we use the majority of with mindfulness. And a part of that treatment is, the front end of treatment requires a degree of psychoeducation. And what that means is just teaching you and breaking down what's actually happening. Now, often when people, as I said, like, mom guilt isn't a bad thing. Mom rumination is not a healthy thing. Two completely different experiences. What we want to look at here is, for anybody who's being hit, is to recognize, just because you feel something doesn't make it a fact. And that is so important when it comes to mindfulness practice, which is, we are going to have a whole bunch of thought today that aren't true. We're going to have a whole bunch of feelings that aren't based on the evidence, or if we were in a court of law, the jury would be like, yeah, no, I don't know if there's enough evidence to say that you're a bad mom, like court dismissed.
Yeah.
So I think that your job here is to understand that just because you feel guilt doesn't mean you've actually done something quote unquote bad and wrong to the degree that you're thrown in jail. And as you've mentioned too, I think it's a constant check-in and is this expectation also factual? Because there is no real gauge for being good and bad. Like there's no definition of quote unquote a good mom. One kid could say, my mom's a good mom. That next kid is going to have a complete different definition of what they consider to be a good mom. We're not all agreeing on what this idea of good mom. What I think often we're talking about there is this idea of perfectionism.
Yeah. We don't really see people parent in their natural state in public. We don't really see other people parenting. Like, we don't see other people parenting. You know, I do mornings, a lot of mornings and evenings by myself because my husband's an emergency physician. So I oftentimes will have three kids running around doing, you know, God knows what. And nobody is there observing me lose my shit on my four-year-old who dumped the maple syrup all over. You know what I mean? And so I think that we may have the perception that other people, when they're in their homes with their kids, are acting like the perfect mom at the, you know, park, who knows that there are all of these eyes on them. And so is thus like, okay, well, I won't lose my shit because I had this external pressure of being viewed by other adults. And thus I'm going to be my perfect self. I think that part of it is like, I'm the only one who's here in my house who snaps at my kids. I've said things to my kids where I'm like, oh God, that could be brought up in therapy later. And then different between me and somebody who's feeling a lot of guilt is that I'm not telling myself that other people in their homes are somehow better parents than I am. I'm just like, we're all doing it. And the important thing is my relationship with my kids, and that when I mess up, which I inevitably do every day, multiple times a day, I explain it to my kids so they too, who are human beings, can be like, oh, hey, it turns out you can make mistakes and you can say something wrong. And you know what? It's not the end of the world. The people who love you will forgive you. You just have to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I will try not to do that again.
And you hit it on the head for the parent. Here's an example. My mother and father never once argued in front of us, never even raised a voice, nothing but this gentle love. And most people would be like, that must have been so nice. And it was. But by the time I got married, I had no idea how to manage conflict. None. And it nearly decimated.
Wait a second. We're broken. We can't agree on a restaurant.
I would freak out if we had a disagreement of like, I had zero training on how to manage this. So if you think that being perfect is doing your child any favors, you're wrong. What they need to see is us screwing up and repairing, falling down and getting back up, making mistakes and modeling being effective around those mistakes. You will do your child so many more favors if you model falling down and getting back up in the many ways that is. Or even like you talked about your body, modeling loving gentleness towards a body that maybe society has told you isn't the way it should be, and having those conversations of like, it's uncomfortable when we can't meet society's expectations, isn't it? So I think that the first step here is, you know, in the term of anxiety treatment, we're constantly talking about being with discomfort, right? Being in relation to our discomfort instead of constantly running away from it.
Yeah.
And so for this, it's how can I just observe, okay, there's guilt, or observe imperfection? How could I observe that moment where you just want to shake your head and be like, what did I do? How did I do this? And just be like, okay, I'm here. How can I be really gentle and kind as I navigate the rise and fall of this emotion?
You do the same thing for pain, which is really interesting.
Yeah,
chronic pain.
It's the same strategy.
I think what's hard with perfectionism is a generation ago, it was kind of that Stepford Wives model of perfect aesthetic, perfect shape body, cooked all the right meals. And it's almost shifted now that perfectionism is that self-actualized mom who parents in the right way, is up to date on all of the tips and scripts to manage a tantrum right. Don't have the perfect body necessarily, but the perfect relationship with your body. And you have all the right thoughts. And I feel like that's now the perfectionism goal, is to have all of the mental health knowledge to do it right, which I almost think is harder than where it was before, because you cannot be your own pediatrician, OBGYN therapist, dietitian, eating disorder expert all in one just because the internet says you can.
Again, I think this is coming down to us just let's all just settle in to the fact that in 10 years' time, there'll be new rules that no mom 100%. Will achieve. Right? That, and they're not bad things. Like the goal to have your house clean and be really presentable by the time your husband gets home back in the feast, it wasn't particularly bad, nor is what it is right now particularly bad. Where we get ourselves into trouble is when we expect 100% perfection on those societal norms. And I think that we can just settle in. Like, I want to just imagine all of the listeners, like we're sitting on a couch and we're like, yep, didn't achieve that one today. Like, how'd you go? And us all going, yeah, no, me too. Like, I think it's navigating through radical acceptance that we just won't get there. And that there can be beauty in that.
I mean, I think it too, it's the discomfort. It's like, you know, with a clean house, you can almost, I'm the person that really kind of needs it to be a certain level of tidy to be okay. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be perfect, but when there's stuff everywhere, I'm like, I really can't settle. And rather than trying to make myself get comfortable with the mess because, you know, it shouldn't matter and it's an external situation and just, you know, be here now, I'm like, you know what? There's a good enough that I get to, and I don't push myself beyond that. And I think that we can use that for a lot of things, like for body image. I don't know if I'm ever going to get to a place where I really don't care if I gain 10 pounds and I can't fit into like cute clothes and I look different. I don't know if I'm ever going to get there. And at this point, I'm just like, you know what? If it's meant to be, if I'm meant to achieve this like body positivity that a lot of people are talking about, we're still holding ourselves up to a standard. It's just a different standard that's, again, this like self-actualized, so accepting, so aware, and we're still beating ourselves up when we're not there.
And I would sort of share my own personal values on this. Is my one value is to love as hard as I can. That's something that's so important to me, just to love hard. Like, and my kids are always know this about me, which can be a little overwhelming, apparently.
Yes. For a child. my husband's a love hard person.
Fine, which is fine, right? And I have this expectation to be all the things. I'm pretty big on, like, I really want to be the best mom I can be.
Yeah.
But the difference is, if I don't achieve it, there's not a disciplining process.
Yeah.
I think that the expectations are beautiful as long as your way of at the end of the day, when your head hits the pillow, if it's like, okay, let's get the whip out and let's checklist. Yeah. How did you go? And it's like a scale of like rating yourself out of 10 or ABC or whatever, is as long you can have high expectations, as long as you can humble yourself at the end of the day with like, I'm just, You mentioned, Claire, one of the questions of the scale, which is seeing yourself inadequacy shared by other people. A main component of compassion is to see our common humanity.
Yeah.
How we are just like everybody else. I can try to be the best mom every day and I'm going to hit the pillow like every other mom, knowing that we did the best we could and that is just the best it can be. And then the last thing to remember here, and this has been a huge practice of compassion, is what's best for my daughter is not best for my son. And so I have to be okay with some child, one of the two of them, not getting all their needs met, because I can't be two different moms at the same dinner table.
Totally. Right? Yeah.
So I think it's, again, it's hitting the table, hitting your head to the pillow and going, I did the best I could, being willing to feel the feelings around that.
I love that. You know, it's interesting that you said that. In Judaism, we have this concept of teshuvah. And when we are meant to question ourselves, we're meant to want to be better and to evolve and to see where we made mistakes. But it's meant to come from a place of, for us, it's about returning to Hashem, returning to God. So it's meant to not be punitive and not be negative, but to be a really compassionate, loving experience. Do a quick run through of my day and the areas in which I want to be better. In our practices, oftentimes we ask for help with something, knowing that we can't do it all by ourselves. So I'll say, you know, I cannot tell you how often I have to ask for this help, keeping my tone of voice on a kinder range. I think what's so powerful for me with that practice is accepting that I need help. You know, you can throw it out to the universe. You can throw it out to your subconscious and you're like your incredible brain that has so much ability to help you. You know, just saying, hey, I want to just pay a little bit more attention to my patients. You know, it's really beautiful what you're talking about. It's not the expectations. It's not necessarily the want, the desire to be better, the problem, but it's really the pathway that we take to get there that can be problematic for us. The way I would love to wrap up with you now, you've shared so much wisdom, and I feel like I'm going to be thinking about some of these things that you've said for days and weeks to come. Would you do us the honor of summarizing the things that you think is really the most important for people to walk away from, the steps that they can take in understanding self-passion and just moving themselves kind of gently away from the judgment and the punishment that is so common as moms?
Yeah. So I think the first thing, thank you again for the opportunity. I love chatting on this topic. It's so important. And it's a practice. Like, I'm here talking about it. I'm not great at it either. Right. Like, we're all figuring this out. So the first thing I would say is, just because you think something or just because you feel something doesn't make it true. We talked about that. And I think it's really important, because a lot of people think that just because they think it must be a fact, and therefore they need to become the disciplinarian on themselves. Yeah. So maybe start to challenge some of the things that you're saying to yourself might be helpful. The second piece is, there is this beautiful opportunity to model to our children kindness. There is an opportunity for us to model to them our innate humanness, which may or may not be probably one of the best gifts you can give them and yourself. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be, you talked about this before a little bit, about it being like a bit gross or a bit uncomfortable. It doesn't have to be overly emotional. You might even put it in your own tone of voice. It, instead of being, you know, from the lens of self-compassion, we often talk about like, may I be gentle and kind. That might be the language. Yeah. If that doesn't sound good to you, you might be like, hey, babe, be nice to yourself, girl. Like, it could be that. Yeah. It could be like, my love, give yourself a little break here. Or like I said, it might be a little more sassy but as long as it's encouraging, it's gentle, it's not looking at your weaknesses, it's also encouraging you of your strengths, it's celebrating wins, it's taking notice of not just the negative, but also giving yourself a little bit of a celebration for what you are doing beautifully. Yeah. Often when I give someone that homework, they're shocked, because they came to me with a laundry list of all that they're doing wrong. But when I actually gave them the homework to look for what they're doing right, and I mean like things like, you did the laundry, you said goodbye to your kid, you kissed them goodnight. Like, there is a lot you're doing beautifully at. Yeah. So I think it's also about being more aware of the actual facts of what's going on. Yeah. And then the last piece here is, how can you, this is the deeper work, how can you create a safe place to feel your emotion?
Yes.
Because often the reason we beat ourselves up is we don't want to tolerate emotion, and then we move to punishment. So how can you get better at having guilt and then moving back to the present moment instead of staying on that? How can you have an event that didn't go well? You're allowed to ask yourself, what would I have done differently? Mm-hmm. But then you have to move on, knowing that we have to be humble. We're not going to be perfect.
Yeah. I think that the point about allowing yourself to feel your emotions is so crucial for health, y'all. And I think it's something that people should try. Just actually, when you feel an emotion, just actually just like sitting with it, and you will be surprised. This is a practice that I started not too long ago. And because I keep seeing, like, there's data, there's research studies, and also it just seems like in my life, I keep seeing that this repression of emotion seems to be leading to so much physical manifestations. And as somebody who has 3 chronic pain syndromes that I am slowly, like, I've got 2 under control and I'm working on the 3rd. I was like, maybe this, there's something to this. And y'all, yeah, it sounds so simple, but listen to what Kimberly Quinlan is saying. Like, feeling your emotions is actually, it's so simple, potentially be a breakthrough thing for you. These yeah, very simple things of being slightly kinder to yourself and feeling your emotions, and those things alone that she has talked about in this episode can be life-changing. I'm so grateful that you were here. I think that our listeners are going to benefit so much from your wisdom. Where can people find more of you and all of your wisdom?
Of course. Thank you. I have a podcast too called Your Anxiety Toolkit. I have an Instagram page also called Your Anxiety Toolkit.
That makes
it
easy.
And a YouTube called Your Anxiety Toolkit.
I love it.
We have a whole bunch of online courses people can take for anxiety disorders, and you can go to cbtschool.com, like cognitive behavioral therapy school, cbtschool.com, where we have a bunch of resources there.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here with us, and we'll see y'all next.
Thanks for listening to Ask Dr. Sterling. Is there someone in your life who would benefit from listening to this episode? Send it to them. If you've left a review in Apple Podcasts or Spotify, thank you so much. Please send me a DM at Ask Dr. Sterling Podcast on Instagram with a screenshot so I can say thank you personally.